Things are going to start happening to me now.
You've done all the reading. You're a scholar. You're a professor. You've done all the reading. You've done the intellectual heavy lifting.
Or less, eat shit and die.
You wouldn't know a fact if it begged you all night long.
Want to, like, give the wrong impression, because I am very high.
F***ing right up behind him with a hatchet. Smash, smash, smash. Yeah.
Care. I'm a libertarian. What I'm getting is,
did you vote for Joe Jorgensen or Trump?
Who?
Joe Jorgensen. That was the perfect answer. Thank you. That was...
The Libertarian Podcast Review. We're starting off. Look, we're gonna just hit this out of the park with our coffee, Fox and Sons coffee. I think our guest hawks this stuff as well. Who doesn't in the libertarian space? Go to foxandsons.com and put in their code review. You get 15% off $25 or more. I believe me, Tyler, is the greatest coffee aficionado in the libertarian space. And we can argue about that. We can. I promise you, when we will. Okay, so this is a Libertarian Podcast Review, episode 139. We're going to talk about a few things here. I just wanted you to know that for every 30 minutes that someone spends watching this show, every day you become 17% more gay. And to make sure that is the case, we've got our first gay gentleman coming on, Andy. Andy, how are you doing?
Good evening. Long time no see.
Long time
Your no face see. Looks great. You stopped drinking gay beer and you just switched to gay coffee, huh?
Actually not. I'm just feeling a little bit better here. So
you son of a bitch.
Right. So you're back. I'm excited that you're back. But we got a guest on that's a little bit more important than you. So
who isn't more important than me?
There's a lot of people, maybe not, that are more important to you. Bring him on. Kyle Matovic. Jeez. Of Liberty in Liberty and Health and a few other podcasts. And I think this is your band playing right here.
Yeah,
right?
I heard it. As soon as it started playing, I'm like, is he really playing my band right now?
Yeah, that's how we do it here. We produce a show like you wouldn't believe. Welcome, Kyle. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your music and whatnot. And then we do have one more little guest we're going to bring in, and then I'm going to kick him out like should be done. So then go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, well, my name is Kyle Matovic. I host one podcast, but I'm part of a two where I co-host these two others, perhaps. So I host the In Liberty and Health podcast, talk mostly geopolitics, libertarian topics, health stuff as well. I dive into a lot of like science on muscle research, health research and stuff like that. Also get into some relationship stuff as well. I also host Five Till Midnight with the guys for Biting the Bullet, Adam Nutter and Samuel Urban. And then I also do Cognitive Vigilance with Brandy Bishop and Ren Connell, I think he goes as. And we talk about mostly relationship stuff on there. So, and I also play for the band A Common Crown. I've been their guitar player since 2018. We've put out a CD in 2020, and we've put out a few singles within the last, 2 years. We're probably going to have a new one out here maybe later this month. Hopefully not next month, because I've been bugging them to finally put it out because it's a total neck breaker. But yeah, I'm a man of many hats, you could say.
All right, and you got a hat on today. Look, before we go into too much, and I appreciate you coming on, we're gonna throw this loser wanted me to,
oh my god,
but we're not gonna talk to him very long because one, he's in the car. Are you by yourself?
Yeah, always.
Oh well, I mean, you're married and have a child. I mean,
he might have left them on the side of the road or something like that.
Right.
Of course, dude.
Are you drunk driving right now?
See the last answer I gave to Tyler's question for the answer to yours.
Oh, yes. He said, always.
Always.
I think that was the answer. Okay, Dickie, yeah. What do you got to plug? And then I'm just going to kick you out because you're not on the show tonight.
Yeah, go read my book at Barnes & Noble's 19 Minutes, Consequences of a Sequel Patriarchy and Its Accomplishments. Watch the very few lame videos I've made on my Twitter, and go see me on Kyle's show, Liberty and Health, sometime in the next fucking 10 years.
Yeah.
So.
You stand for neither liberty or health. So all the best. right. He's still talking.
That was pretty good. Yeah, it's going to be like a Tool's next album. We're going to be waiting a few years till it finally happens. Every time we set it up, he normally has something come up or I have something come up. So I don't know. Maybe it'll happen eventually. But yeah, man, I'm totally down with drunk driving. I think we've all probably done that a handful of times, right?
Well, look, you've got to practice driven. To do it well.
Yeah, I mean, what other ways there to do it?
Right. Andy, you drive.
I've never driven in my life. Never driven a day in my life.
Yeah, that's not. I went to what a.
They say you work a job you love, you'll never work a day in your life. You drive drunk, you'll never drive a day in your life.
could be.
Fair enough.
I went to a LA Lakers game when I was like 12 years old with my dad. And we were leaving, and out in the parking lot, this guy has a shopping cart full of Coors, and he's pushing around. He's like, drink and drive, stay alive, drink Coors. He was trying to sell it in the parking lot after the game. It was solid work. We didn't buy any necessarily. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you were a kid. You probably could have had some if you really wanted to.
I mean, what's Coors going to do? Is that, Tyler? You can talk about it.
No, my parents don't drink, so it just wasn't even a thing. But my dad and I
laughed. Anymore.
What? Okay. That was 65 years ago.
Yeah, I am quite old. So let's talk about that. Kyle, how young are you? Unless you want to say.
No. I turned 29 last month. Actually, a week before my wife and I celebrated our one-year anniversary of being married.
Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah. I turned 29 last month. And if I take my hat off, people might contradict that. I'm losing a little bit up top, but I'm going to get that cleaned up tomorrow and people won't even know.
All right. Are you going to go Clint, just shave it all off, or how?
I do like a bald fade, so that way people don't know. I try to deceive the people. I've done everything I can to maintain some hair, but you know, if it gets to be too much of a motherfucker, I'm not afraid to shave it off. But you know,
there's only so many things you could do. Yeah.
Yeah. I never thought it was going to happen to me. I always used to make fun of my dad for being bald. He's not like bald, but you know, he's definitely, you know, losing it up here and right there, and it just so happens that I started to lose it there too. So I'm like, well, it's what I get.
Yeah, Andy, you're wearing a hat as well. Is that same problem?
No, I got a full head of hair, dog.
You know what that is? Shit. Oh shit, your forehead goes back.
It's coming back.
Like mine though. Yeah, you take anything?
That's just
because
I have a big old head.
Yeah.
Well, that makes two of us at least.
I drink exclusive whiskey, and it keeps it on there. This is a 12-year bourbon. I hadn't tried this one before. Ooh. I figured I'd crack it open for the special occasion.
Oh my god, I'm jealous. That kind of makes me want to yell at my wife to go get me a drink.
So you're a drinker, I take it. And how does that work with your health stuff?
Alcohol is a known poison. There's definitely no health benefits to it. Right. But the benefits of being, you know, drunk, or I shouldn't say drunk, but like the benefits of enjoying drinks with people, I think outweighs the negative consequences within reason. So like if you're getting drunk every single day, okay, well maybe that's a problem.
Right.
But if you're just having a drink, you know, maybe once a week, which is usually what I do, like if my wife and I go somewhere, I'll maybe have like an old fashioned, maybe margarita or something like that. Yeah. I try to fit into my diet, but I don't drink a lot. Sometimes on Thursday nights when we do cognitive vigilance, if I'm feeling a little spicy, I'll maybe have a couple drinks, but I really limit my alcohol consumption. I used to be going to the bar like every single day before I really got my shit in order. But yeah, I pretty rarely drink now. I don't recommend people do it, but
look, when he stopped going to the bar, that's when he started losing his hair.
Yeah, that too. That's true.
I'm just saying.
There is a correlation.
Doesn't equal causation, but
so what do you mean by got your shit together? What was the problem before? Let's talk about that.
Okay, so I guess we could probably start with my perhaps health journey. So back when I was like 22, I started also my drinking. Yeah, only when you're operating a vehicle, right?
Right. And even then it's yeah.
So I was like 22 years old and I was kind of going out to bars a lot. And then this is going to sound like it was because I met my wife, but like when I met my wife, I started to slow down drinking a little bit because I realized like, okay, well, this is making me fat. So like, I think a year or two prior to that, I quit drinking beer altogether and I just drink whiskey because, you know, if you're drinking beer, you're going to be drinking beer all night. She was out on a job. She used to work as a line painter. And I remember her saying the one day that like, hey, I don't think I should have like gluten anymore because I think I'm having issues with it. So she cut out gluten. I'm like, oh, well, maybe I'll just try and like eat a little bit cleaner over time as well. So I started hearing people talk about this wacky carnivore diet. This is back when Jordan Peterson started blowing up. And I remember hearing him talk about it on YouTube, and it just seemed like the most fascinating fucking thing in the world to me. And I decided, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to try this for one weekend and see what happens. So I tried it for one weekend, and like all my bloating and a bunch of other shit just seemed to like go away for that weekend. I don't limit my driving. But I experienced that over the weekend when I did carnivore for a weekend, which is basically just like all animal products. I'm like, okay, well, that was interesting. So I went back to eating pretty much, it's pretty similar to the way that I eat now, but I wasn't consuming so many like sugar-free stuff and kind of like a higher protein diet, or like hitting a protein target consistently.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah,
we'll keep going here, but I know the carnivore diet is like, I think Jordan Peterson, people have autoimmune disease, they really kind of get it. Did you have a reason for doing it, or just, hey, my I'm gonna do it with my wife, the eating diet?
Well, my wife had gone gluten-free, and she's been gluten-free ever since. Like, she has an allergy to the point where pretty much if she has something with gluten in it, then she'll be borderline bedridden for about a day.
Yeah.
So it's pretty rough. For me, I didn't really have any issues that pertain necessarily to like autoimmune or anything like that, but I was having digestive issues, and I attribute more of my, I don't want to say like depression or anything like that, because I was never like clinically diagnosed, but I did have suicidal ideation and a lot of like mental issues before I started to get healthy. So I just figured, okay, well, I'm going to try the carnivore diet just for the hell of it and see what happens. So I lost a whole ton of weight initially, and generally what happens on ketogenic diets or low carbohydrate diets, which a carnivore diet would fall under that, is that you lose a lot of your glycogen stores, which is basically like carbohydrate and a different energy source within your muscle. And with that, you lose a lot of water weight as well. So like one thing that's really, that makes people buy into keto diets a lot is that like, as soon as you start doing them, you lose a lot of weight very, very quickly. So it seems like you're making progress really fast, but then obviously that progress starts to slow down a little bit because you can only lose so much body water. So, I did that for probably about 2 years, and I had success when I stayed to the diet. But the question that most people will never ask themselves when it comes to keto, carnivore, or anything like that, they always say that they're really good when they're on it. But like, the question should be like, well, why can't you stay on it? If you're always good on it, then like, why can't you continue down that path? So what I would do is I'd be good for a week or two, and then I would just like all out binge. I would, you know, if we went to the Cheesecake Factory, I'd have 2 pieces of cheesecake. If we drove past Dairy Queen on the weekend, I'd get a Blizzard, and I'd feel like an absolute piece of shit because I couldn't stick to the damn carnivore diet. And I did that for, like I said, about 2 years. And then I finally realized, okay, well, clearly this isn't working, because if I was able to just eat meat for the rest of my life, then I wouldn't be having like these insane cravings for ice cream and stuff like that.
Were you still doing your workout regimen at this time, or?
Yeah, I've been working out consistently for about 10 years. But at the time I was a lot less serious. Actually, when I started the carnivore diet, I want to say I was getting serious in 2020 is when I really started to take like lifting a lot more seriously and began to look into it a lot more. But it was probably 2021, I want to say, that I finally decided like, okay, well, I clearly can't do this carnivore diet forever. I keep binging, and then like I lose all the progress that I made this week because, you know, I knock out, you know, 6,000 calories on the weekend. And on average, I started tracking when I was doing the carnivore diet, I was eating anywhere from about 1800 to like 2200 calories a day, which my maintenance right now is probably about 2800 to 3000 calories a day. So I'm about 1200 calories low on what I should be eating when I was doing carnivore. And I think that's where a lot of people end up when they do the carnivore diet. So my wife and I went to Longhorn, and I remember sitting down, downloading Carbon Diet Coach, which is what I use now, and saying, all right, well, I'm going to slowly reintroduce carbohydrates and just kind of see what happens, see if I gain a whole shitload of weight, or see like if I can handle having carbohydrates. And then surely enough, I'm like, oh, like if you reasonably intake carbohydrates, you'll be okay. Because I remember seeing in carnivore groups all the time, people would be like, oh, I had... I fasted this morning, but all I had was a cup of black coffee with a whole stick of butter in it. I had a pound of brisket for lunch, and then a whole pound and a half of ground beef with bacon for dinner. But I cheated, and I had a blueberry, and I gained 6 pounds. And they would blame it on the blueberry. I'm like, well, could it possibly be because you just ate like fucking, you know, 5,000 calories of fat and beef?
Yeah, you went Chris Christie on us, and it's not the blueberry.
Right, right. It's not the blueberry, and that's what nobody could seem to figure out. And that's what I didn't figure out for the longest time. So I eventually worked my way back to pretty much where I'm at now, which is like a balanced diet. And I do what's called, if it fits your macros, which people call like IIFYM. So basically like I'll have whatever I want as long as I hit like my protein, carbohydrate, and fat goals for the day. Now, like some people may interpret that as like, oh, well, you just eat Pop-Tarts and drink protein shakes. But, right. If you're doing a, if it fits your macros kind of diet, basically you should be trying to get as many whole foods as possible, which is what I do. So get like a lot of lean proteins. So, you know, lean ground beef, lean steak, chicken or lean pork, turkey, and then, you know, lots of fruits and vegetables. And then, you know, if you want candy or some kind of junk food, as we'll call it, highly processed foods that taste good, then you can fit those in if you've hit all your other goals for the day, which is generally what I do. And I think that's very sustainable for me. Now, for some other people, it may be necessary to do carnivore, low carb or low fat or something like that, because they can't handle having those kind of foods. That may just be their personality. But for me, basically a balanced diet where I do, if it fits your macros, seems to work best for me.
How soon did you start tracking food? And, and you're still doing that right now. Is that correct? And did that make the process easier? Cause you could understand, as an example, I used to track pretty extensively, and I tried doing gluten-free. Not because I had a celiac or anything, but simply because the amount of carbs, the unknown, until you start tracking everything, was just insane. Yeah. A muffin here and there. And when you track it all, you start to understand, one, if you're deficient in, you know, your proteins or whatnot. So did that help the process of you realizing, oh, I'm binging in the wrong way, and I could do it in a more healthy situation?
Yeah, it really did. So I'd been tracking probably about the second year I was on carnivore, and that I've been tracking ever since. So probably for the last 3 years, with the exception of maybe like the last couple months before like this month, I stopped tracking because I went on a dirty bulk, which I wouldn't recommend doing, but it is enjoyable. Yeah. Dirty bulk, which basically just where you kind of like hit your protein targets. And then if you want something, you're going to enjoy it. And,
I gave a reference to Andy real quick on a dirty bulk, dirty bulk. Is that what your drug dealer has been giving you?
I thought he said dirty bomb.
You have like a long beard. Was he wearing anything on his head or?
So, what are the benefits of children's blood to your diet?
it if you get the adrenochrome, it really pumps up your PRs, dude. I'm telling you.
Tyler, I was going to ask you on like on race days and stuff, would you try to stay away from carbs or would you load up on carbs?
What's he racing? Oh, you mean me?
On your race days when you're racing your cycle. Yeah.
Oh, me. You know, that was a method that we would, I implored years ago. And then it became the point where that's not, you know, as science kind of progresses and you understand your body, you're not so concerned about that. So, and by the way, my racing would be multiple days in a row. So at some point you're just cramming as many carbs as you can and as much fuel in as you can, because you know you're out burning maybe, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 calories a day. Well, you've got to replenish that somehow. So yeah, and once you start getting behind, you know, day 4 or 5, it's a real big problem. But I like Kyle's reaction. He's like, race day?
No, I kind of figured that's what he was saying. It's funny, the world record holder for, I think it's the fastest, oh God, I want to say it was like the fastest 100 miles, Zach Bitter, if you're familiar with him. He follows me on Twitter, and when he does his longer races, he says he kind of gets like honey. They have like a certain kind of supplement, especially like a very, very quick digesting form of carbohydrates. Yeah. And generally when you're doing races like that, you're going to want that fuel, because carbohydrates are like your body's preferred source of fuel when it comes to like highly anaerobic activities. So activities where your heart rate could be raised a lot more, where like, you know, low intensity, steady state cardio, which would be like you're walking or maybe like low intensity exercise, this could be more like just burning your fat stores, really. But at the end of the day, like whether you're burning glucose or if you're burning fat, it still depends on energy balance at the end of the day. So like when people talk about a ketogenic diet, they say, oh, well, you burn tons of fat on a ketogenic diet, which is true. But the thing is, you also store a lot of fat because you're intaking or you're taking in a lot of fat. Now, when it comes to like a low fat diet, you're not burning as much fat because you're burning mainly glucose, but also you're not storing as much fat because once again, you're not taking in as much fat. So there's like a truth to this, but once again, it's all going to depend on energy balance at the end of the day. So like, you know, if you're on a ketogenic diet, yeah, you're going to be burning a ton of fat. But if you're taking in 3,000 calories of, you know, fat, protein, and a little bit of carbohydrates, and your daily, you know, maintenance is 2,500 calories, and you'd be storing 500 of those calories as excess energy, which, I mean, if that's your goal is to gain weight, then okay, that's fine. But if it's not, then you have a problem.
How do you feel about fat shaming people?
I
say that somewhat of a joke, but not, especially after 2020, when you're online and people are telling you to get the vax, put a mask on, and I'm outside, you know, getting as much vitamin D as I can. And you're just like, why don't you shut up?
I don't know. Tyler gets a lot of D in his life.
I'm totally good with that. Whether it be a vitamin D or another kind of D. I think whatever tool works. I don't think fat shaming is necessarily a good tool universally, because there definitely are some people who probably wouldn't be very receptive to that. I was receptive to it because when I was in middle school and high school, it motivated me to go, you know, lift and become more attractive and less unattractive. But I think for guys, they're generally going to handle it well. Women probably won't handle it that well and probably don't like it when you call them fat. And especially if you're trying to bang them, that's probably not a good idea to call them fat. But I mean, different strokes for different folks.
There's like a spectrum thing, right? There you can. Yeah. I think it's like you don't normalize being fat. And that's the problem we have now. Right. Is the normalization of fat is beautiful. No, it's very unhealthy. Right. And doctors don't even feel like they can necessarily tell you you're morbidly obese. Type of thing. So there's, but you don't need to fat shame me, but you need some real truth.
That all my enemies are fat. My enemies are obese and obese losers. So that's great. I'm all right.
You want to name them?
What's that guy's name? Jerry Nadler. He's one of them.
He had the tummy tuck, but he's actually kept quite a bit of it off because he was quite the balloon there in the early 2000s.
Chris Christie.
Yeah, he's gross.
There's quite a few obese fuckers up there that are ruining our world for the rest of us. But yeah, I mean, this whole fat acceptance movement has always been kind of goofy to me, and it really is like a rejection of reality, because it doesn't take a genius to figure out that being fat isn't good for you. I don't know how that's like a revelatory thing to say now, and that fat is beautiful. Like, no, I think just about any guy, if you ask him if he would prefer his girlfriend to be fat or to be lean, that he would probably say, like, I'd prefer that she be lean. And like, I think women have like this distorted perception of what guys find attractive. Like the shredded bikini models, like I admire that, but I don't admire that in a way like, wow, I can't wait to tap that ass. Admire that in a way of like, it took them a lot of discipline to get there, to get that diced and look that good. A woman who's in the range of like, you know, 15 to 30% body fat is going to be pretty attractive, because basically like the difference between men and women when it comes like average body fat numbers is going to be about 10%, because women have a lot more fat mass naturally. So like a 5% guy would be absolutely diced. A 15% woman is going to be pretty diced as well. So, but like for most women, I would say like 15 to 30% body fat is probably going to be like a reasonable spectrum. 30% is going to be a little bit more fluff.
Black women. What's the reasonable spectrum for black women? And when, that's
like 30, that's like 30 to 45.
Depends.
What would you say to a black woman who says, I'm not fat, I'm just big boned?
Well, tell her we could pull up the MRI scans to see how big your bones really are. I guarantee you they ain't that big, honey.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, you don't see people, archaeologists, whatever. This one was big boned. I mean, it's just, Yeah, sorry to.
They do have that extra bone. It's that extra bone that prevents them from hearing the smoke alarm.
The chirping.
Yeah, something there. I'm interested in this topic could go any which way it wants, really. But you talked about getting your shit together, and I know like the LP or the Mises cock, you know, the people Mark Claire types, or they're like, get your own shit together. They're talking about money and such. And I'm like, not everyone has that ability, but what you can do is, get yourself fit the body positiveness, how it exudes yourself out to others is one, that's a great step. And then you're going to end up with a nicer woman or guy, whatever your preference is, Andy. Yeah. But that is a thing that I was like, they should be working on that. Then the dental side, and we can work our way through some of these other aspects. But, what do you think about when you said you got your shit together? Were you already fit, or were you working your way towards, and did that make a bigger difference?
I would say that like what when I got my shit together, so to speak, was basically like, okay, well, when I was in college, I graduated the top of my class, and I went to an automotive college. I made sure that I graduated as a, you know, automotive service excellence master certified technician. And I was only one out of 105 students that did that. I only missed half a day. I made sure that I hustled my ass off when I was in college so that way I get a good job after I got out of college. So like, I bought my first house when I was 22. Well, and I still live here now, obviously, but I wanted to make sure that, excuse me?
Same house?
Yeah.
Okay. At 22, it'll be that's solid.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it'll be 7 years in April, which seems like yesterday for me. But I wanted to make sure that like I was going to have my life together before I really, you know, settled down with a girlfriend or anything like that. So like even before I met my wife, I already had my house for like 2 years. I lived by myself for a brief period of time. But to the post-libertarian point, it was really interesting because like a lot of people were like shocked by what they had to say, but it always seemed so self-evident to me that like, hey, if you're going to be talking politics or trying to spread the message of libertarianism, shouldn't you kind of like, you know, display those values personally? Shouldn't you be somebody that's like worth influence? Like people should actually give a shit about what you have to say because, you know, people in your community recognize you as a respectable person, people at your job recognize you as a good person, and you have a network outside of just your local LP, the, you know, four or five people that go to your local meeting at the bar up the road. Like you should have more influence than just them. You should be somebody outside of politics, not just, you know, this political being who's a one-dimensional person. That aspect has always turned me off. So
absolutely,
that's why I really never started podcasting or doing any of this shit until, you know, I really had my life together for a good period of time and already like established good network and everything like that. So, but yeah, when I more to the point of getting my shit together as well was more like, okay, well, am I doing well in my job? Am I getting consistent raises? Am I making more money every year? That's true. Am I good in my relationship? True. Am I good with my family? True. Am I good with my band? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a wonderful network of people. And part of that is because, you know, my dad owns a business and we have a lot of family friends. But like to have a network that you could literally call somebody, I could call my plumber and he would be here within 48 hours. I mean, you can't put a price on stuff like that. My HVAC goes down, same deal. Like that's the kind of stuff that people should aspire to, is having a reliable network of people that can be there on, you know, on a moment's notice.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to bring you, you're an auto mechanic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me see, if have you ever done anything like this?
The answer is probably yes.
Oh, okay.
Okay, maybe not that extreme.
But, I don't love know that those I would headlights. Be so brave to even be in that car right then.
Yeah.
You might run out of blinker fluid.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if that was a house in Section 8 housing, those smoke alarms wouldn't detect that from a mile away.
Yeah, that's crazy. What's the I don't know exactly. Do you work at a private shop? Is it like a big company? Or what you do? But how about aftermarket type of stuff? Do you help friends? Some guy comes over, some friend of yours, and he wants you to hop up a car or do something. And by the way, my dad was an auto mechanic, so friends are always needing help. They're always doing stuff, and my dad was always willing to do that. Just kind of what happens. Anyway, do you get called in to do those kind of things as well?
People generally just kind of message me and ask me my thoughts on stuff, like what they think is going on with their car, and I'm kind of glad to keep it that way. Yeah. I really don't do that much side work because usually it just ends up being a clusterfuck and I don't have all the tools that I need. But I started at a dealership in 2013 when I was still in high school, worked there for about a year and a half, worked for my dad for a brief period before and after. And
did dad own an auto business? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So my family's been automotive entrepreneurs since, I want to say, like the 20s or 30s. So, I mean, it's like in my blood. I mean, my grandfather owned a couple gas stations and then owned two different shops at one period. And then eventually my dad went into business for himself after working for dealerships for about like 10 or 11 years. And he's been
at
his
location now. How do they feel about Henry Ford and the Jews?
Yeah, but you know what's funny is, if people would probably call me a Fed if I said it, but my dad's actually a Freemason, and I haven't dug too deep into the Freemason conspiracy, but like
Judaism,
my dad doesn't really talk about it. Oh, yeah. I don't know. My last name's not that Jewish, so I don't know. It's Czech, or I'm Czech and Polish. So I don't know, man. That's pretty close to the Jays back in the 40s, but not that close. my family's been in the automotive business forever now. I mean, like, one cool thing was when I went out to college in 2014, my sociology instructor, I was 2 hours away from my home, actually had a can opener from one of my grandfather's old shops, because he actually knew my great uncle, which it like blew my mind when that happened. So if you go into my dad's shop, he has all sorts of old Batovic Auto memorabilia, different hats, coffee mugs, can openers, just cool stuff that they used to have back in like the 50s and 60s that they don't really do anymore. So my dad's owned his own shop since about 2001 or 2002, I want to say. And then I started at, I've mostly worked for General Motors. I've worked for 4 different GM dealers, 2 Chevy dealers, and then 2 Buick GMC Cadillac dealers. And I've been at the place I've worked at now for a little over 2.5 years. I worked at the last place for about 5.5. And I just last year went to school for all our hybrids, and I became a master certified hybrid technician as well.
Are there any like online mechanics or YouTube or Twitter mechanics that you look up to, or like
I do not look at car stuff online. As soon as I'm punched out for the day, I can't wait to not think about cars. But yeah, like, so good.
How do you? I mean, like that's such an interesting question. Me, I'm an attorney, family law. I don't dig into the family law shit when I'm not at work. I'll dig into constitutional stuff or politics, but yeah, it just doesn't thrill me. But I guess neither really does being an attorney. So that's interesting. So you're not a car guy. That's just something you're good at. Is that correct way to say it or not?
Yeah, I would say when I was in my teen years, I was definitely more of a car guy, but now, I have my 1984 Monte Carlo with T-tops and I love it, but like, that's like not a priority in my life right now. And I think about it, like maybe I should spend a little bit of money on this, spend a little bit of money on that. But there are just so many more important things. And like, I know some of the guys I work with, they can't wait to like work on cars after work, work on cars before work, and buy cars, sell cars. I got no interest in that. My main passion is music and fitness. So like, I would say like
about that. Is your dad happy you went into the business though?
You know what? My dad was always an interesting figure, and I greatly respect him because he never pulled any bullshit with me. I remember being in the car with him at one point and him telling me, I don't think that you guys shouldn't have kids, but just be aware that like, because my dad has 5 kids. I have 2 brothers, 2 sisters.
Too late for Tyler and I both.
But he told me, he's like, well, this is like 33 years of my life that I never got to do anything I wanted because I had kids. And he told me this when I was like 15 years old. I mean, it sounds fucked up, but I mean, he's laying it on. He's not bullshitting. So, you know, I have to respect him for that. And when it came to like the automotive stuff, he's obviously very proud of me. And I think that if my grandfather was still alive, he would be too. He always said like, look, I don't want you to feel like you have to do this, but you know, if you want to do this, then okay, well, I'll gladly help you wherever I can. And he always has. So,
he owned a shop, but he was also a mechanic. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, he worked for my grandfather for a period of time. And then he went to the same college that I went to, except for, I think he went in 89, obviously. and then he worked.
You laugh, but that's when I graduated high school. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I remember listening to one of your shows the one day, and I'm like, he's like damn near the same age as my fucking dad.
Yeah. It's sad when Cole's saying something, I'm like, Dickie's my son's age. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no, you're good.
Hey, Kyle, are you planning on having kids? Do you have one on the way, or what's the plan for that?
Planning on it.
Hell yeah.
I want to talk about this dad thing. And the reason I say it is because, like I said, my dad was an auto mechanic. I mean, he had his own shop for years. He's retired now because he's 83. But I was not good at fixing cars, partly because he was good and he'd just be like, hey, fuck off. Let me just do this. And it thrilled me. And I was into cycling. Yeah. So I was doing bikes and fixing those. I could do everything you could imagine with that, but it didn't thrill me with it. So your dad obviously somehow fostered some interest in you to do this. My dad was a car guy up and down and did all this and just didn't rub off at all. So how did that?
Well,
I mean, did
it's
he?
Because all the chemicals in California in the water.
We lived in Oregon at the time. You cut, so go ahead.
Same thing.
It probably rolled through the ground eventually. Yeah, there's like a. It, like the water rolled its way to the topsoil or something like that over there in Oregon. As far as I was concerned, I kind of always felt like I was going to be a tech. I never really had a major interest in cars, but like I looked at what my dad did and I knew he was successful and that he seemed happy enough. So I was like, all right, well, you know what? I'll give it a shot too. So I ended up going to school, and funny enough, my instructor in the vo-tech for my high school actually went to college with my dad at the same time too. So I did pretty well there, and then I went to college and I did well there, and now I would say later on in my career I've more of become an electrical guy, because that's where mostly problems are with vehicles. There's some guys that do like mainly transmissions or diesels or certain other stuff. My specialty is more like electrical stuff, and it's kind of funny because my dad's the exact same way. When we look at like wiring schematics, it's always pretty obvious to us what we're looking for. So that's also part of the reason why I went to
rebuild many alternators or what.
No, God, we don't do that no more.
Yeah, what's interesting is I've had many conversations with my dad, because I went through engineering, so I was mechanical engineering, and one of the things you don't always think about, which is an engineer, they're like, oh, I'm going to design something, and they don't take the time to go talk to the person that's going to work on it. My dad used to always complain about the car. It's like he's like, these fucking engineers, you know, the way they put things together in this car. So what would be something that you would go tell an engineer right now? Like, I know that's getting worse and where it's more compact in, but anything that comes to mind, you're just like, this is what I would do immediately different.
I would tell them that their wife was really good last night and they should consider that before they continue to fuck us over. Okay. But no, that's what my dad always used to say. He said that a technician slept with an engineer's wife. So that's why they eternally decide to fuck technicians. It's kind of funny because actually one of my instructors in college actually was a General Motors engineer. He helped design the Buick Grand National back in the 80s. And I remember him explaining this to us in class. He said, you know, I told all of the people who are paying for us to design cars, like, hey, why don't we make this easier like it is in racing, so that way we can fix this a lot easier. And he said that the people told him, no, make it cheap. And that's generally the way they do things now. So I would tell engineers, like, please just make this shit like not work and be easy to work on, so that way, you know, GM doesn't have to pay us ass loads of money to fix the damn thing and we don't hate our lives trying to fix it. Because right now what we're seeing a lot of, I've had to do it more times than I would care to admit, is run wires from end to end on a vehicle. So there's a lot of harnesses that may start in like the left front part of the vehicle, and then it'll break somewhere between the left front of the vehicle and the right rear of the vehicle, and you have to run a whole new wire from the left front of the vehicle to the right rear of the vehicle. It's not fun. I've had to do it more times than I would possibly care to even elaborate on. But just stuff like that, because when you look at some of these harnesses, there's just hundreds of wires in it. And over time, as the vehicle flexes, the engine torques, then eventually you just rub that wire enough, and the next thing you know, it's broken, and then you have some electrical nightmare that you're chasing
down. That's the story of Andy's sex life.
Just this little thing rubbing, and then eventually...
it breaks.
Yeah.
It's so true. Very little rubbing.
Andy, you got any more on that before I just talk about some other things?
Let's talk about you being a cuck, but let me go get a beer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we could talk about that.
And I'm mostly here to just have fun and derail a little bit, but I'm having fun. But I'll be
right
back.
That's what we're doing here too. So.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah. So, what about your other shows? I by the way, Luke and Typo love Biting the Bullet. I listen to that. I usually catch up on their episodes every other week or so. But they're on with you and Nutter, and then Sam is it,
Urban.
Who was it? Urban. Okay. Yeah, and I've caught your show a few times. Here's your problem with that show. Okay, I'm just gonna say it right out here, and don't be offended. Which is, you guys all do it, and StreamYard lets you each stream to your own platform, so you're all going to your own platforms. And the problem is, the people that comment like to be seen all together. So now you comment on Nutter's. I don't know if every, you know, see my problem here.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. That's why I kind of stopped streaming it to my YouTube channel, because I figured, okay, well, let's build up the 5 Till Midnight YouTube channel. I was doing the same thing with the Cognitive Vigilance YouTube channel, and I stopped streaming to mine because, like I said, what I wanted to do is get more eyes on the content to get more subscribers over to there. But like you said, a lot of people kind of want to be in the same group chat together and want to be seen together, you know, interacting with other people in the chat. And when you have, you know, the same video being streamed all these different channels, it's a little bit difficult to do that. But no, I love that show, 5 Till Midnight. I wasn't sure exactly where it was going to go at first, but usually it just turns out to be like us talking shit to one another for about an hour.
Yeah.
I got to say, one of my favorite ones was when Sam was in an airport and we told him to hold up a portable battery charger and shout from the river to the sea and fuck with everybody. We kept telling him, like, yeah, I was like, how much would I have to pay you to shout bomb right now? And it's like him, and there's all these people in the background. He's just laughing his ass off. But yeah, the entire time we're like, all right, deep throat the banana, hold up the battery charger and say from the river to the sea, and just fucking, you know, fuck with people. And there was a fat black lady rapping, and I won't say on your channel what I called her, but needless to say, a lot of people got a laugh out of it. It rhymes Negress? With jig. No, it rhymes with Jigglypuff, except for there's no J.
Okay.
Well, look, we're protected. I'm Netanyahu's top guy.
Yeah. So. By the way, my dad tells a story. I think it was in the late 70s when all these planes were being hijacked. He and his buddy, they had to go pick up a car or something. So they're taking a plane. And the guy it was in the winter. My parents lived up in the Northwest. He has a box of chains with him. So he takes the chains and they're like, hey, what's, and they're already on the plane. And they're like, hey, what's that? What's that bomb? And he goes, oh, it's a bomb. That's what this guy said. escorted off the plane, and he was investigated for years after.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, you're funny.
Not my dad, but the other guy.
Gotcha. My brother in 2020 was sleeping on a plane, and he had his mask down beneath his nose, and they actually landed the plane, and he said that he like almost got escorted off the plane by like a half a dozen police because he wasn't wearing his mask properly. Yeah, that's how crazy some of that shit was. Should've back
just
then.
Said, you know what's crazy? I just saw this the other day, which was, you know, it was illegal at the time to wear a mask into a bank, right? And then COVID happens. Suddenly, you're required to wear it in the bank. They had to change laws specifically for this, I think, in like North Carolina, different places. You're not going into a bank here, and they'd try to make you wear a mask. And I was like, what if I put the one with just the eye slits? Now they're trying to, you're basically, some black kid went in there with a mask, and they said, hey, you have to, you can't wear this. It is such a weird world we live in. I don't know.
They still love wearing the mask, but on their chin. If you notice, minorities are still black people and brown people. Minorities.
Okay. That's, 2020 was interesting.
They still love wearing the mask around their chin.
Yeah, no, I see people wearing masks all the time. And like sometimes they'll have them, like you said, around their chin, or they'll literally have their nose poking out. I'm like, why don't you just take the mask off? Like nobody's going to judge you. Nobody cares at this point. Literally today when I went into a Giant Eagle, which I'm not sure if you guys know what that is. It's a grocery store around here. I went into Giant Eagle and there was a lady walking out with a mask. I'm like, how do you not?
What color was she?
Absolutely insane. She was white.
Yeah, it's a special kind of white. And then
we need an early life check.
Yeah. A lot of Asians that, you know, we have one of the courtrooms or courthouses I'm in. It's got like 8 different courtrooms and judges in there and different ones. Only one of them she just stopped and she's an Asian lady. And I don't know why that was the case, but she was more than anybody else, you know, wearing the mask. We've got to wear it in her department and everyone else is fine. So
masked and vexed.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff.
What makes stepdads cucks?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, we're going into this hot take. Yeah, this got me in a lot of hot water last time.
And by the way, throw it out there, I'm a stepdad. I have two stepkids that are adopted mine. So I just throwing that out. He's but you cuck. Can say whatever you want. And I never came at you for any of this because, one,
yeah, I know.
It's my life. And I don't really give a shit what you think about it. But yeah. with that in mind, you're wrong. Go ahead.
I really like the way you phrase that. I just don't think that raising someone else's kids is a good investment of your time or paternity. Now, that's not to say that stepdads are bad people. I think that's what a lot of people thought I was saying, but I never meant that. If you look up the definition of cuckoldry, it's raising another man's kid unwittingly.
Unwittingly.
Once again,
what does unwittingly mean?
That means you didn't know.
Right. So you're talking about your wife fucked someone else, had the child, and you think it's yours.
Yeah, which actually there are stats on this where about now I'm sure this isn't like a guaranteed thing. Like I don't, the stat said that like 30% of children born in the U.S. today are actually not like the guy who's with the woman at the time. Now, I don't think that's like, it is that bad, but that is something to be aware of.
Right.
Now for me, I would, single mothers were not an option for me. And that was right. Obviously part of the reason why I picked my wife is because she had no kids. Whatever that people want to do with their lives is whatever they want to do. That I know. Because believe me, I would have known by now. Yeah.
And I think that's why in the Jewish bloodline, it goes through the mother, because you can always know that the child, you know, if it comes out of her, it's hers, right? Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Right. Well, like on the show that I do with Brandy and Ren, on cognitive vigilance. Brandy is admittedly so a feminist. And I think what a lot of feminists and people who would you would describe as maybe like leftist or blank slate equalist, they would like to say that like, oh, men and women are kind of like the same and they both don't care. You know, they both care about the investment in their offspring and stuff like that. But I don't think that's true at all. Like, I think guys have a lot more of a vested interest in making sure that the kid is theirs. I think it's a very natural instinct, and I think that's a reasonable thing. And that's why most guys innately kind of have an aversion to dating single moms, because that's a bad bet for their paternity. Now, once again, if you want to do that, I don't have any problems with that. I don't think there's anything morally wrong with that. And people who do raise other people's kids, if that's your choice, I mean, that's great for you. And if you like those kids, great. I mean, I have two wonderful step-parents. If you like those kids. Yeah, if you like those kids, but like, you know, there's some situations where that's not the case. But yeah, I mean, I have a great relationship with my stepdad and I have a great relationship with my stepmom, but I also recognize
call him
that
a cuck.
No, I've not done that. Well, then you're but he didn't that. Raise me. He also did not raise me. I mean, I only lived with him for maybe like 2 years.
Okay.
Well, and that was when I was an adult.
Cuck, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's minor cuckoldry.
By the way, at your age, exactly. You should not be going out there and trying to find someone who's had kids. It's a rare experience. Right. I do have one friend of mine. He happened to, his wife had twins that were just like right when they met. And there was some weird thing that the dad, he was a piece of crap, whatever. Anyway, he's raised him since they were like 6 months old. It's a unique situation. Mm. He's got his own, you know, additional kids. Me, you know, I married, had two kids. We got divorced. Now I'm an older guy looking for someone. And it was a tough situation. You don't find a single girl with no kids because she wants more
and
kids.
If you see a single girl in her 30s or 40s without kids or anything like that,
there's
understandably
problems there
so.
Too.
Right, you're going to have problems
so
there as well.
I found a woman that had two kids and a vasectomy, which means it was perfect. We didn't have to worry about having more kids. And so, mm-hmm. And by the way, we're very lucky. But you're right. So there's a lot of statistics, too, about stepdads being the abusive ones to the kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of problems. So it's not for everybody. I totally get it. But maybe it's like the fat shaming. You don't necessarily. Oh, Andy's gone. He did not like this.
He was the one that kept bringing it up. I mean, like I said, I don't have any personal problems with this, but I think a lot of guys get bent out of shape about it because I think it's their ego's invested in it. But like as a younger guy, if you have options, then like you should be dating single moms. And that's kind of what I want to bring out. And that's why I talk about like a lot of the red pill dating praxeology kind of stuff is because I want guys to have the confidence in themselves to know that like, hey, I have options and like, I'm not going to have to date a fat heifer or a single mom at 30 years old after she already got ran through by the entire football team. And now she's ready to settle down conveniently. Yeah. And ever notice like a lot of women, when they get to their late 20s, early 30s, they always magically become religious and conservative. Like that very, very convenient timing that now all of a sudden you want to settle down after you spent, you know, all your early 20s when you're smoking hot as a, you know, getting ran through all the time. From red light to red pill.
Right. No, look, there's ideals in this world, and then there's other circumstances that pull into it. So, no, and by the way, it's important for, I think, people to try to have, here's the ideal, and let's try to strive for being this good thing. But then, you know, everyone's circumstances are different, right? Andy's baby mama died. I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but that's tragic. And so what's he going to do? He's going to try to fix this situation. And he's going to try to find someone that's nurturing and can replace this child. Because the ultimate thing for these kids is to make sure that there's someone in their life that, I mean, like, as an example, my stepson, well, he's my son now, when I met him, he was 6 years old. He's now a senior in high school, 17. And he was just with his mom, because the dad was already out of the picture, his mom and his sister and all these girlfriends, and he was just whatever. And now he's got suddenly a big brother, and he's got me. And his life changed of having masculine people in the family. And it was really important.
And that's very important. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think a lot of people misinterpreted that as like, there could be no good that possibly comes of the situation. BB's top soldier. Wow. Well,
you know, I forget, because I just forgot about it and it comes back, which is, you talked about that's their identity. Now, I'm very proud to have these two wonderful extra kids of mine and whatnot, but you're right. Like, the reason I never like came at you on it, because I was like, well, that's Kyle's got his experience. He doesn't really give a shit about what's going on with me. And I shouldn't really care about necessarily what's going on with him. He's trying to help people. Right. And I get that. But people get so worked up. It's whether the religion, the Israel thing as well. You know, it's another thing. You get all worked up and invested in this.
You hurt his feelings, Kyle.
Yeah, no, I'm saying he didn't hurt my feelings. That's my point, which is
he hurt my feelings.
Oh, I
no, I'm kidding.
Hey, what about stepmothers? Is there any
stepmothers?
Yeah, is there any?
Like porn on.
I think stepmoms, when it comes to like a guy situation, that's probably like a little bit of a flex. But I mean, the other thing is that like women would actually look at that as like a net positive, because that means that guy has been selected by other women that, you know, they decide to have his kid. So like for women, that may be attractive. Whereas like a guy, you see that as like, okay, well, I have to spend extra resources on another man's kid. But once again, like having a, like Tyler, you said, where your son now has, you know, big brother and other people in his life that he didn't previously have before, that could change the trajectory of his life in a very, very positive way. What I think
he wears
a lot of people...
Let's Go Brandon shirt to school with a lot of the, he's got a lot of trannies at his school. So it's
Oh yeah, there you go. Nice. Yeah. Rub their nose in it a little bit.
Anyway, but, sorry, go ahead.
Like those situations are good because, once again, he's going to have people around him that he potentially wouldn't have had before. BB soldier's back out now. I mean, he's probably going to a different camera angle.
Keep talking. We'll worry about this.
If he'll come back as like the Likud Nick God or something like that. Netanyahu's top guy's back. Net and Yuhu.
My internet dropped out for a while, so I had to come back on my phone.
Oh, it looks like it's back in just doing wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. You got about a total of, 98 pixels down there.
I'm going to defend myself only a few times with the cycling thing. I was a professional cyclist. I had a national championship in college. I'm not as fit now because I broke my back, but people, it's okay. You can call me gay. You can call me everything else. But the point is, anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, you're good. You're good. What was it like breaking your back, and like, what is the rehab like for that? I have to imagine that sucked ass. And did you have to go for, I know I'm throwing a lot at you, but like for the stats I know on back surgeries, I heard this from Lane Norton that like there was a meta analysis done where the vast majority of back pain disappears within 8 weeks. And obviously, you know, you broke your back, it's a completely different story, but like only 50% of back surgeries are actually successful. So like the more you learn about back pain and trying to treat it, it's like, this is a clusterfuck that you're better off just like trying to resistance train and get a little bit healthier and train your core and train your spinal rectors rather than trying to do anything like surgical or anything that's like an intervention on your back.
So I broke my neck and my back, July of 2020, somewhere in there. I should know the date. But it was non-load bearing, so I didn't have to have surgery. So that's the good part. The problem is then I'm getting back riding. I had a little, and I'd been, by the way, I've been doing this since I was like 16 years old, racing all over the world, had tons of crashes, but nothing like this. And I had a little PTSD about, you know, getting back in racing and doing this. So I was getting back and going, and then this last year, I started to have some, I was going to the gym a lot. I was working out, still riding my bike, but I've done something in the C7 range that has been causing me problems for like the last 6 months. So, that's where I broke it. So I'm believing that that's related, like a bulging disc and a problem. So I've never ever had, I've torn my Achilles, I've done all kinds of, you know, broken wrists and stuff. And always come back and never felt like I'm injured. I feel like I'm over the hill. I'm gaining weight. I'm still drinking beer. And I'm not able to be very active. I'm finally like, I can't even ride my bike. And the problem is, because when you put your shoulders, the way it compresses onto my arms, I just can't even do it. It's just too painful. But I've been running now, so I'm trying to get back into that. So the back is crazy when you talk about that and trying to, you know, recover from all that. It is, you know, you just rely on it so much, you know, golfing, picking kids up, whatever you're doing. And that's, it's weird too. You talk to people that injure their back. Sometimes it's just picking something and twisting just the wrong way and you're fucking yourself over. So that's my story.
Another thing that I learned was that, like, some people have herniated discs and no pain, and some people have no discs herniated or anything like that and lots of pain. So, like, the way that we understand pain is, like, very, very shallow compared to what it actually is, because, like, people's perception of it, like, we think that, like, you know, if we do something like this hard enough,
you can't see
your brain
you
says to feel
it.
Pain. Right. But, like, also, like, the way that people are going to interpret that, or, like, you know, what you're doing at the time may also affect how you feel. So, like, you know, when soldiers get shot or something like that in a war, sometimes they don't even know that they've been shot until afterwards. And they're like, oh, holy shit, that actually really hurts. So like, just the context of it is so fucking important too. So, like, I had a little bit of a back injury probably about a year ago, and I aggravated it. I think probably what largely caused it is because I did too much deadlifting with piss poor form. And I used to always put up videos of me doing 405 pounds for 5 reps over and over and over again. And my form was awful. And then I remember I went for a record. I was doing the trap bar and I did 400 pounds for, I think it was 10 or 12 reps. And then I remember I, like, sitting like this, it just fucking killed me.
Yeah.
So, I started doing the trap bar deadlift more, and I started focusing on, like, core contraction, started wearing a belt and stuff like that. And eventually my back got to a point where I felt like it was good. But I remember I aggravated it once after that. I went to go do a deadlift and I didn't brace my core enough. And I remember I literally felt like something in my back just, like, slipped, and oh my God, it hurt so fucking bad. But I came back from it pretty quick. So now I'm back up to a conventional deadlift with 510 pounds. So I've worked my way back up and I feel pretty good, but yeah, fucking back injuries and stuff like that is just a motherfucker.
See, I think I injured mine, the last thing here, doing, like, squats, and I probably wasn't doing them right. I just remember there's a little, like, hot feeling. And, and what's so crazy, you're talking about, like, especially what I've done all my life, you know, with cycling, like, pain is something you just, you're used to. Either you're wrecking and you finish a race, or the ability to go and exceed limits that you never thought were possible. It's crazy. You know, you just get used to that kind of stuff, and just, and guys like that in general, just walk things off, whatever. But yet I'm like, when the back is starting to bother, it's debilitating. I mean, it just literally, like, you know, I'm sitting here doing a podcast and I'm like back here and I'm twisting my arm and in a lot of pain, and it's just annoying.
Did
so
you put some CBD
we're
oil
old men
on
talking
what?
Problems now. What wait, going on? What's your internet, man? What?
Did you put CBD oil on it?
I did put some CBD cream on it tonight, and I feel this is the best I felt in months.
Yeah, I noticed that as I've gotten stronger and take care of my recovery, my back and everything like that feels a lot better. And especially when I lost weight, like, I used to have aches and pains all the time when I was, like, 23. I was 250 pounds. I'm about 5'11". So I people told me I carried it well, but I mean, I was definitely a big boy and I had aches and pains once again at 23 years old. And I figured, okay, well, I'm getting into my 20s now, so I can expect some aches and pains. But then, you know, I lost 70 pounds and then was like, oh, so, like, I don't have to hurt all the time. And, like, I feel so much better. And I see one of the big reasons why I wanted to get healthy and stay healthy is because, like, I look at my dad, my uncle, and my mom, and all the other people in my family, I'm like, they're in their, like, 50s and they're broken. Like, they always have pain. I don't want that to be me. I would love to be the Delph. I would love to be the dude who's 65 years old that can still deadlift 400 pounds, squat 300 pounds, and bench press, you know, 200 or 300 pounds. Like, that is the ideal to me.
I think that's the way to, by the way, my mom, they're both 83. They still do walking. They still drive around. They're very healthy still. My mom has fat shamed people since the day I remember. It's always like, that fat person, you know, those kind of things. With that in mind, she's always very conscious of other people's weight, which actually, you know, to some extent helped all our whole family. So you're right, though. You know, you say 65 and I'm like, oh, it's like, you know, 8, 10 years or so. And that's my goal as well. And I think that, I mean, that's a good thing. It's 65 is nothing. Now that, you know, for you, it's a long ways off. It's your grandparents' age. But for me, it's just right around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, I look at people that I work with in the automotive field. I'm like, man, these people are just like broken by the time they're in their like 40s. And I just, I would not want that to be me. Like, I want to be the exception to the rule in this respect.
And why is that? My dad, you know, he's here last year and we were doing something on my car and he's just like, he goes, look, I don't want to be hanging over his, he goes, my back hurts now. It's probably from hanging over in the hood of a car for years. Is that what you're saying? Or they're just like too big for me doing that? That's kind of nimble thing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. To all of the above, because, to reach under dashes and stuff like that. When I was trying to take a intermediate shaft, so basically like you have your steering wheel, then you have your intermediate shaft, and then the intermediate shaft goes down to the steering gear, which is what, you know, pulls the tie rods to pull your wheels, you know, side to side. I remember being in a terrain that I was doing an engine on, and I literally had my like mid back on like where your knees would pretty much be on the seat and my feet were hanging over the headrest. And I was trying to pull on the fucking intermediate shaft to get it off of the fucking, rack and pinion. It was
missionary.
You get in positions like that a lot. Yeah. Yeah. I was like getting blown by the headliner of the vehicle. You got weird
Jay
injuries.
Ford says,
he was in the OBGYN's office.
Yeah. Have you got weird injuries from repetitive motions? I'm dealing with tendonitis now and I'm 9 years older. No, I can't really say that I have. I could see why you would. Sometimes my elbows act up, but I find that like because I stay active that normally goes away. So like normally like the first set of like tricep extensions or something like that, or like let's say I'm breaking a caliper bolt loose, so you know you're putting all your weight behind it and pushing, my elbow will sometimes hurt a little bit. But normally after kind of moving it for a little bit, that tends to go away.
I wonder how much pain tolerance and pain management is genetic, because they say, you know, redheads have a higher pain tolerance and threshold. So I'm curious, you know,
that's just cause they know that they're not going to get a hot chick and so they have to endure these.
You have to endure women a little bit more. Yeah. My knee was bugging me a little bit more recently, but there probably is a genetic thing to pain, because I mean, genetics play a very, very big role in many things overall. So like when it comes to the way that your muscles look and the way that you like your maximum muscle potential and your personal fat threshold, that's going to be largely determined by genetics. So like Asian people actually have like a lower personal fat threshold.
Explain
so
your
like
height.
Yeah, that can actually. Yeah.
Genetics can explain your height and your heart problems, but they can't explain your tendencies for robbing and theft, right? And pain tolerance.
It's, hey man, I'm not the social science guy here, but there's definitely something to that. But like Asian people actually have like a lower fat threshold. So like, that's why you won't see many fat, like ridiculously obese Asians. Yeah. Is because what happens is that like, when you become insulin resistant, that means that your cells will no longer accept the fat that's in circulation, and therefore it has to pour over into your viscera, which is like around your organs and everything. So like Asians won't get insanely fat, but they become insulin resistant at like a lot lower of a weight than like, let's say, you know, you or I could. So like you or I, I'm guessing you're probably some form of European. I mean, like I said, I'm Polish and Czech and Italian.
You're talking about me, so, or Andy?
He's well, just, all three of us probably.
Yeah, I'm German. Andy's 100% Tennessean. I don't know.
But yeah, we could probably get pretty fat before our you know, our fats all start pouring over into our viscera. Oh, is that the F trophy?
You can say hi. Yep, turn the song off.
Okay. I don't know what she's going.
She's gonna write Nikki equals corruption.
I'm asking you if you want to say hi.
No.
Okay.
I don't think it's right, internet. Is he blurry for you too?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask you some questions here. I just thought of these real quick as you're coming on here. And it's mostly to do with your Twitter, which sure. I do enjoy.
Oh my God, this is going to be bad.
No, it's not. It's just a few subjects we're just going to go through. Caitlin Johnstone. Do you know who she is?
Yeah, no, I know Andy's going to hate my answer to this, but I think she's probably one of the best foreign policy anti-war writers there is. People can knock her all day, but she, when it comes to foreign policy, she's spot on. As much as I hate to say this, like outside of like the libertarian right wingers, so like let's say you're Lou Rockwell, you could maybe even put like Pat Buchanan in that camp. There's no one on the right who's like good on China. And I left wingers, when it comes to like foreign policy and anti-war, the dissident left wingers, your Jimmy Dore, Rania Kallik, Abby and Robbie Martin, Caitlin Johnstone, Misty Winston, they all get China, Israel, and all foreign policy things 100% spot on. So,
You said foreign policy. So my problem with like her and some, and I'll say the next one too is, I think the libertarians or the right does this when you get a dissident that suddenly agrees with them. They take them in, they take the Dave Rubin, and they're all excited because he's the gay guy. And yeah. What they do is Dave,
he's our gay.
He uses them and they go towards his direction. And so with Caitlin Johnstone, I'm perfectly fine saying, yeah, thumbs up on her foreign policy. As soon as she chimes in on economics, I call her gay or whatever. And
how
do you feel about, pushing back on them now, those, because I know Patrick McFarlane and I have gone back, and I love the guy, but we've gone back and forth differed on that, where I think it's perfectly right to stand up for yourself on certain issues like that.
Yeah, I mean, I always throw the caveat out there that, like, hey, I think she's an absolute retard on economics and stuff like that. But when it comes to foreign policy, she's absolutely spot on there. But I mean, you know, the same deal with the right wingers. And this is just the reason why I go hard against
the two are so linked. The two are so linked that it's hard to separate them for me. So that's why I take it.
The economic from foreign policy?
Like foreign policy and economics are one. Yeah, they're.
Okay,
war is a lot of the health of the state type of thing.
Andy, go ahead.
Yeah. Andy, you're fucking up here.
Yeah, motherfuckers. That's all right.
I understand that criticism. For a host of reasons. I think. Her foreign policy comes from an anti-Western, anti-American standpoint. And it's okay to not like the American empire, but it's a base level anti-American. It's not just anti-American empire. It's I hate capitalism and free trade. And therefore, I'm going to carry around Mao's little red book and root for the commies in this conflict, no matter what. So,
well,
It's easy to be anti-interventionist and say, you know, I don't want America involved in this, but your reasons for being that are like for the death and destruction of us.
That's why. I think that's so hyperbolic and ridiculous. Like a crazy cat lady in Australia is absolutely zero threat to us. And I get it. Her ideology sucks, but like the foreign policy stuff.
No, she is very, zero threat. I agree.
Yeah, but like this is why I get annoyed when people say they want you dead. Okay, well, let's talk about right wingers and how 50% of right wingers want mandatory military service for all Americans. So, do we want to say that right wingers want us dead too? If we're willing to go down that, fair enough. And then like all the right wingers that I worked with, okay, so
are they right
wing? The mechanics in my last shop, I worked with one of the top donors to Trump in Pennsylvania, right? A blue collar dude in the last shop that I worked at, a Master General Motors technician. That dude could not wait to tell you to put on your mask, get your medical treatment in 2020. And they were all for lockdown. So like this idea that right wingers are so much better on COVID and that they don't want you dead. I don't think anybody wants you dead. They just think that your ideology sucks and want you to shut up and just listen to what they have to say and then move on about their lives. People don't give a fuck about other people enough to want people to be lined up against the wall and shot. Could you say that's the conclusion of their ideology? Sure. But like, that's not their immediate goal. I think it's ridiculous when people start saying shit like this, because it's not just left wingers. There are plenty of right wingers that would be glad to put you in a mask and. Yeah. Well, I don't want anybody dead, man. I just want to leave people the fuck alone, and I want people to be prosperous, happy, healthy, whatever. But Caitlin Johnstone, she's a great anti-war writer. She's retarded on economics and everything else like that. But the fact that she reaches over 100,000 people with her anti-war writing, that shouldn't be downplayed, because she's more correct than all the right wingers that are popular right now.
Hang on. Go to the next one.
She doesn't have any influence.
That's what I was going to say.
He just said she doesn't have any influence and can't be a threat.
I did not say no influence. I said she's not a threat. A crazy cat lady in Australia. Yeah, but what's she going to do? Tell a bunch of fucking, wanky 13-year-old angry communists to come up to you? We would fuck them up easily. Are you guys really scared of some fucking communists? Come on, get the fuck out of here.
Crikey.
No, that's what I'm saying.
RFK Jr. Well, let's go to him.
Okay. All right. So as long as we're all agreed there.
Yeah. RFK Jr. Next one.
RFK Jr. You know what's funny is I viewed him very, very favorably, and it was out of it was out of naivete because I didn't know how, you know, how deep he would take Netanyahu's balls on his chin.
Wait till you find out about Caitlin Johnstone.
Well, but I mean, she doesn't, she hates Israel, so I'll give her that. Yeah. But, like, I liked him for the fact that he was a dissident left winger who could kind of put the, I forget how Dave put it, but it was a very, very good way to put it. That, like, basically to see who all on in the areas like where we won't reach, who will resonate with his message of like anti-interventionism, anti-corporatism, you know, anti-medical fascism. He's a very interesting figure, and I still appreciate him in that respect. But like when he completely buckled because someone called him an anti-Semite once, that really throws a lot of that credit out the window, because it's like, okay, well, clearly you don't have any balls if you can't take being handled, if you can't take being called a mean name once.
Yeah, and so I did an episode where I broke a lot of his policies down. His thinking as it's been, and I mean, here's my problem with him, which is I think he's always had the worst gut instincts. COVID might be the exception.
Fair.
But he
from my understanding, his first reaction on COVID was pretty bad too. Like he was pretty pro lockdown initially, if I recall correctly.
So the problem I have, he's Chavez man, he's guns, all everything. He's just bad. Yeah. And I loved what he was doing with COVID, and I enjoyed him coming on these shows and talking, and he seemed like a good guy, right? Like that. The problem is you get. What you're saying is like, oh yeah, he can bring some of these people in, but he's got such bad takes on so many other aspects. And he's a Kennedy. Right. People always need to remember he's a Kennedy. Stop acting like he's a great. Anyway, that's just my personal opinion. And you've obviously come around because he's shown himself to be kind of the weasel that I personally always thought he was.
Yeah. And like I said, it was definitely out of naivete that I just didn't know him as well. Like I seen him debate vaccines on Michaela Peterson's show. Once, and that was all I knew of him before this year. So, we also can't understate how important it is for a presidential candidate to be not hawkish on China when the empire's biggest goal right now is a war with China. It's not Russia. It's not Iran. It is China. And every single person in Joe Biden's State Department cabinet has said that,
and remember, they're aiming for
war with China.
When this was all taking place and probably the height of his popularity, he was right on Ukraine. So that was an important part.
That's what I want people to kind of take away from the whole RFK situation, is that it's just good to have somebody out there who's just not the worst who's the least bad Democrat.
But
and
you
who
should
at
have
least...
realized he's an attorney. Why would you think favorably?
I didn't know that. I did not know that. Once again, naivete, ignorance on my part. I will fully admit that.
Okay. Alex Jones.
Do you know about the Great Society?
Shut up. We're going to my questions.
Okay, well, that's all 60s, and yeah, obviously welfare and stuff like that, not good. But Alex Jones, just like he became like a boomer, right? And then also won't admit that a plane hit the Pentagon. My problem with conspiracy people is that they just endlessly throw shit at the wall with little to no evidence, and then want people to buy into it wholesale. And then, like, when they're wrong, they just never admit it and just move on to the next thing. So, and I mean, he said as much himself that he's an entertainer, and that's really what he is. And I think too many people get hyped up on him and think that he's always just spot on and right about the next thing.
Right.
But the truth is that I think he just says wild shit. And then when wild shit happens, like, oh my God, he's right about everything. But the fact is that he's just an entertainer who may say crazy shit that turns out to be right sometimes.
I totally agree. And I think his problem is he's done some damage to, and some of the conspiracy theorists do this, which is, they're right on all these other little conspiracies, and they're so wrong on an easy one. And you're like, okay, now you're top lobster. I don't have to trust you on anything. That's to my boy there. Andy, you have any questions? Are you a big Alex Jones fan? I mean, I think taking him as an entertainer is the best way to go. And he is, he's more enduring to me now and entertaining because I don't care about what he says. And I listened to the thing last night with Tucker, and I kind of got bored with it. Then I saw him on Elijah Schaefer, and it was entertaining.
Tucker's kind of a boring interviewer, if I'm being completely honest. Like, I enjoy watching his show somewhat, but like,
he had the
his
guy
interview
that
with Trump,
Obama. What are you talking about?
I watch that one too, regrettably. But like, even his interview with Trump was like so limp-wristed. Like, I'm like, you're not going to press on anything.
Yeah. Andy, you have a question before I do the last few here, and we'll do them quick, and then we're out.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Alex Jones has his faults, but I think he's pretty tapped into like the progressive agenda as a whole. And you can fault him for other things, but just in general, he's like pretty knowledgeable on basically like the technocracy and fucking.
You know what? You say that.
Yeah,
you say
I mean, that's fair.
You're shaking your head.
No, because I just thought of two specifics, which is he sat down with Tim Pool and Michael Malice, and he kept saying things. They're fact checking him, but Michael Malice is like kind of checking him, and he's like, okay, maybe you're right. He's not quite right. He's close, and he's chipping off the edges, but he's not quite. He's an entertainer. Let's stop.
Well, I mean, all you have to know is that these people, he is an entertainer, but he is kind of tapped into something, and he's like. He knows that these people are anti-human, and he might exaggerate and be overly hyperbolic and whatever.
Yeah.
But
right, whatever.
Man's got.
Well, yeah, and I definitely agree with that. fuck the antinatalists. I think that's a good point.
Sex workers.
Sex. I'm okay with sex work being legalized, but I'm not okay with removing the stigma from it. I think that we should shame people who do sex work and shame people who seek out sex work, because we talked about this a little bit on a Thursday night show, which Jesus Christ, that was last night
with the sex worker.
Yeah, well, Brandy and Ryan are both.
Eller has a son who's. Tyler's got a son that's going
paid,
into sex
he doesn't
work,
get so. Paid for that.
But Brandy and Ron were going off about sex work, and they're on like the complete and total other end of the spectrum, and they're like, oh, sex work is good. I'm like, no, this is not good. Where she brought up a good point that like some guys may be at the point now where, you know, that may be their only option, but like you shouldn't look at it that way. You should look at it as like, hey, I'm going to overcome the challenge, and I'm going to be an attractive guy that's going to go out and get whatever fucking pussy I want to get, obviously consensual, but yeah.
Okay, Megan Kelly.
She was pro trans in the kids, but I think she's a total grifter who just pivoted conveniently because she figured out that being a podcast host and hosting the Republican presidential debates pays her bills a lot better than being some lame progressive news journalist is. I think that's what a lot of people in the MAGA movement are doing right now, is that they just figured out being a progressive, or you know, just your standard run of the mill Democrat. Carrie Lake comes to mind. They figured out that just, you know, pivoting to be MAGA and repeating all the same talking points about those damn liberals and those damn Chi-Coms and Israel is our greatest ally. I think that pays the bills a lot better than just being a standard run-of-the-mill news reporter.
Andy, you got
to
take
so that. Much of their goal is to so much of their goal is just to see who can cede ground to leftists more slowly than the other.
Right.
It's just all about
fair point.
It's a game about who can cede ground to the leftists.
Okay, last mm-hmm. one we'll do here. Destiny as a cuck, which I agree with. But let's talk about that one real quick.
Yes, definitely. It's kind of funny because people do totally knock him for it. But I think he's a perfect example of, like, if you're a guy, there's a reason why you don't want your wife to get railed out. And it's probably because that's a very, very likely situation where you end up in a divorce. And we were talking about this. Brandy and Rin are both polyamorous, and I'm like, look, if somebody told me, hey, you should let your wife get riled out, I would say, well, I think you should go fuck yourself, because that's my wife, and this is what we do together. You know, we got married because we want a bond between her and myself. That's not for anybody else. So I don't know, the idea of open marriages and open relationships, that's not for me. Maybe it's for some people, but I think for guys, they don't want anything to do with that. And yeah, Destiny's a cuck, because why would you let your wife get railed out by other dudes?
I just was surprised that he
I don't need to intellectualize this. The physiognomy checks out.
Yeah, that's the point.
Damn it, my internet.
Said it better than I could.
Right.
Andy, physiognomy physiognomy
tell us,
checks out.
Jesus
when
Christ.
I went,
tell us what,
when I was at Jesus. The debate here.
Talk.
When I was at the debate between Clint and Destiny, I was the first person Destiny met when he walked into the hotel.
Oh,
and
right.
I was sitting at the bar drinking in like the intermission between
Yeah. All 12 people that were there.
And I was like, who the f-? Yeah, I was like, is this guy in the right? Is he here for this thing? There's no way. But then again, I've been to a couple of libertarian things and there's guys who like wear kilts and shit. So I'm like, maybe he is. I don't know.
We have a,
yeah,
a
guy. Physiognomy checks out. I don't need to intellectualize it.
We have a guy thing out here in California called Starchild and he wears skirts. Anyway.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it's great. Not a big fan. Okay. Andy, tell everyone when they're going to see you back on this show. We'll do Kill Pod, maybe. I don't know if you ever show up, but we're back. We're trying to do Friday nights. Friday nights like this, what, 5 Pacific, 7 Central, somewhere in that range. So look for us then. But Andy, when are you going to be back here and what are you doing?
I can't tell you when I'm going to be back because I don't know, but I'm working a lot, being a widower, and I'm in the process of marrying a beautiful woman and cranking up the baby factory. So whenever that all gets straightened out and settled out, you'll probably see me more regular.
I'll see it whenever.
Yeah, fuck okay. Trophies.
Yeah. Kyle, big pleasure having you come on. I appreciate it. Tell everybody about all your podcasts, what you're doing, when your shows are, and where they can find you.
Awesome. Yeah, well, Tyler, I feel like this has been a long time coming, so yeah. I'll definitely have to have you on mine sometime. Kyle's got that high-def camera, puts you two tards of shame. No, listen, this is a lot of work. I think Tyler looks good in his environment there. But yeah, so I do 5 till midnight on Monday nights at 8 p.m. with Luke Typo for Biting the Bullet, Adam Nutter, and Sam Urban. And then usually like Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, I'll do 1 or 2 episodes of In Liberty and Health. Typically, that airs around 7 or whenever my guests are good. But you can expect 2 episodes a week from there. And then Cognitive Vigilance on Thursday nights at 8:30. We got a packed lineup this month and next month. I think we're having Phil Labonte on next week. And then we're going to have Dave Smith on the week after that. I don't know who we're having on for the end of the month, but James Sexton is going to be coming on next month, and Alex from Date Psych is going to be coming on as well. So stacked lineup for that show. And my band is called A Common Crown. You could find all our singles wherever you get music and stuff like that. And you can find me on Twitter, where I'm most active, at Kyle Matovic, KyleMatovic.
Yeah. So if you enjoyed Kyle tonight and some of the last minute speed round there, they go follow him on Twitter. But before I finish up, Dickie, you okay? You're doxing your son. That's great. How you doing? Where can people find you?
It's not his first time on stream. It's fine.
Okay. Where can people find you, Dickie?
They can find me on Twitter, find _Barons. They can see my band, Lead Nephilim, where I play the bass guitar, and they can see all the dumb shit I make on Twitter. And they can see me on Kyle's show in 10 years.
Okay. Yes. We'll look for that. I just want to say
maybe 8.
I'm going to do my last thing here. So Jay Fort and I are going to watch the Tour de Pharmacy. It's John Cena and a few other people. They make fun of cycling. It was actually a decent, funny movie. So we'll check that out. I do have a high def camera. We'll talk about that. I'm doing a Dave Smith podcast review of his entire show, his catalog, kind of like I did with the Tom Woods thing. Tom Woods has promised to come on the show. I have contacted him on that. So you can find us, check out all our stuff. We're, like I said, Friday nights. Be sure to go check Kyle's stuff out. Check Dickie's stuff out. Also, Andy finally comes into focus here. And Tower Gang. I'm producing the Tower Gang shows because Dickie wasn't very good at it. Everyone else, have a good Friday.
Okay, I'm leaving now. Bye, guys.
But she's back.
And now.
Chick-fil-A is completely overrated. It's not that good. I prefer Zaxby's. I prefer Popeye's.
Takes a tough man to make a tender forecast, Nick. I guess that's me. Keep plucking that chicken.
Should I vote for Dick Cheney on the Libertarian Party? Do I have an obligation to vote for Dick Cheney?
I would say so.
Yes.
Well, did it work for those people?
No, it never does. I mean, these people somehow delude themselves into thinking it might, but it might work for us.
That one dude was like, not a podcast. I can't find it anywhere. They don't have video.
Oh, yeah, Peter Janky. Yeah.
Yeah, I blocked him.
I'll do it. If he unblocks me, I'll...
He'll buy your shirt if you unblock him, Bert.
He's a wigger.
Yeah, nothing cooler than so a 49-year-old wigger. Like,
I just started live streaming. Cut me some slack. I'm pretty high-tech for a boomer. But anyways...
For a boomer.